she came to return. His ring, the Cold King locked the door and said she would hear him out first. There is an old saying in the Valley of Ashen Ford, carved into the lintel of the matchmaker's cottage, and repeated at every bonding ceremony since anyone could remember. A ring given in haste is a ring worn in silence. The women of Ashenford understood it as a warning against rushed promises. The men understood it as permission to say nothing at all. Saren Voss had been wearing silence for 6 months. The ring sat on her left hand like a small cold moon, white gold set with a sliver of black onyx, the sigil of House Valdric pressed into the stone. It was beautiful in the way that locked rooms are beautiful. All architecture, no warmth. She had tried to fill the silence herself, had pressed words into every gap the way you press cloth into a drafty window frame, and none of it had held. So tonight, she was going to give the ring back. She had rehearsed the speech on the walk up the mountain path, the frost crunching under her worn boots, the pine trees carrying their load of early snow like dignified old men. She would be calm. She would be brief. She would set the ring on whatever surface presented itself, and she would not cry. Not in front of Calder Valdric. Not in front of his cold silver eyes and his jaw that never unclenched, and his silences that could fill a cathedral. She had the speech. She had the route home memorized. What she had not accounted for was the locked door. Chapter 1. The Mountain Keep Thornholt. Keep rose from the ridge the way a wolf's tooth rises from the jaw, white, angular, and without apology. Sirin had been here twice before, once for the betrothal ceremony, during which Calder had stood at her side like a carved ice statue in formal dress, and once, 2 months later, when she had brought a basket of pine honey cakes she had made herself, which a servant had accepted at the door with a small, embarrassed smile, and which Calder had apparently never acknowledged, because he had never spoken of them. She was not bitter about the cakes. She had told herself this repeatedly. The great front door was iron-banded oak, and she lifted the wolf-head knocker and let it fall 3 times. The sound rolled away into the snow-heavy silence. A wind came off the ridge and found the gap between her collar and her jaw, and she pulled her wool coat tighter. It was not a fine coat. The lining was mended in 2 places. She was the daughter of a disgraced healer. No pack, no wolf spirit. No place on the hierarchy charts that every family in Ashenford maintained with obsessive care. And she had been proposed to by the Alpha King of the Northern Territories, and she had spent 6 months not understanding why, and now she was done trying. The door opened. Not a servant, Calder himself, which surprised her into a step backward. He was not in formal dress. He wore a dark work shirt, the sleeves rolled to the forearm, and his silver-black hair was loose around his collar rather than pulled back. He looked, in the most disorienting way possible, like a person. His eyes, the pale gray of ice over deep water, moved to her face and stayed there. Seren. Her name in his mouth was always a strange thing. He said it like it was the only word in the sentence. I need a moment of your time. She kept her voice even. 5 minutes. He stepped back and held the door. She walked into the entrance hall, which smelled of wood smoke and pine resin, and turned to face him. The door swung closed behind her, and she heard the lock turn. Chapter 2. You will hear me out. She stared at the door. Then she turned back to him. Did you just... You will hear me out first. He had not raised his voice. He never raised his voice. That was the trouble. Before whatever you came to say. You will hear me out first. The ring pulsed on her finger, cold and present. That's not... She stopped. Tried again. Calder. I have come to end the engagement. I have the right to do that without... You have every right. He said it simply, without flinching. And when I have said what I have to say, if you still wish to leave the ring, I will open the door myself and walk you home in the snow. He paused. 5 minutes. The same 5 you asked of me. She could feel the anger in her chest, the careful structure of the speech she had built all week beginning to shift. He was doing the thing she had never been able to account for. Not cruelty, not coldness exactly. But this, a gravity, a specific weight of attention, as though she were the only fixed point in a room full of moving things. It unsettled her. It always had. 5 minutes, she said. Then I'm leaving. He crossed to the fireplace in the great hall. She followed at a distance, and he did not sit. He stood with his back to the fire, which put his face in shadow and ringed him in amber light, and he looked at her for a long moment as though he were solving a problem he had been working on for a very long time. I know what I have been, he said. I am not going to argue that I have been anything else. I know you brought food to this house 2 months ago, and I never thanked you. I know I have spoken to you in ceremony and function, and almost never in... He stopped. His jaw worked. I don't know how to explain what happens to me, but I owe you the attempt. Siren said nothing. That was a first. Chapter 3. What the Pack Said. He poured two cups from the kettle on the hearth grate. Not wine, not ceremony tea. Just the plain, dark, mountain-brewed thing that people in Ashenford drank in cold kitchens. He held one out. She took it because her hands were cold, and because she was, despite herself, curious. When my father proposed the match, Calder began, the council assumed it was political. An alpha king taking a wolfless mate is... unusual. They said it was a bid for neutrality, that having a partner outside the pack hierarchies would signal something to the border territories. He looked at the fire. They were wrong. My father is dead and cannot speak for himself, but I know his reasoning, because he told me on the day he died. He said, that girl is the truest thing in the valley, and you are a man who has been surrounded by performance all his life. You need something true. The fire popped. Snow ticked against the high window. I believed him, Calder said, and then I had no idea what to do with that belief, because I have been performing since I was 7 years old. Because the pack watches every expression, every word, every... He exhaled. I don't know how to be natural in front of a woman I... Another stop. He turned the cup in his hands. I froze. Every time. I became the statue. I can see it happening, and I cannot stop it. And every day of silence was another day I had to add to the accounting. And the accounting became... impossible, Siren said, before she meant to. He looked at her sharply. You thought if you waited long enough to start, the debt was too large to pay, she said. She knew this particular math. She had done it herself when her mother was dying, and she had not known what to say, and the unsaid days had accumulated until they were a wall. So you kept not starting. Yes, his voice was very quiet. Yes, that is exactly it. She looked down at the cup. The steam curled up. The ring caught the firelight. That's not the same as not caring, she said slowly, but it has the same effect on the person who is waiting. I know. He said it like an oath. I know, Siren. Chapter 4. The Pine Honey Cakes. I ate all of them, he said. She blinked. The cakes you brought. I sent the servant away that night, and I ate every one of them at this table alone, and I thought... He set his cup down. He ran a hand through his hair, which was not a gesture she had ever seen him make, and it made him look younger and entirely undone. I thought she made these with her hands. She walked up the mountain path in October, cold, to bring them. I sat here for an hour and could not understand what I had done to earn that, when I had been so. Cold, Siren said. Cold. He agreed without defense. Then why didn't you write? Send a note. Say thank you for the cakes. They were good. Because it was inadequate. And because I was afraid that if I opened that door even a crack, everything I had failed to say would come through at once. And I would. He looked at her. The silver eyes were undefended in a way she had never seen in 6 months of ceremonies, and formal dinners, and structured silences. I would become someone who needed you. And alpha kings are not supposed to need anything. The fire settled. A log shifted and sent up a brief bloom of sparks. Saren Voss stood in the firelight in her mended coat with the black onyx ring on her finger, and she felt the speech she had rehearsed dissolve completely. Not because she was persuaded, not yet, not entirely. but because she had just seen through the ice for the first time, and what was underneath it was not emptiness. "Your 5 minutes are up," she said. Something moved across his face, acceptance, braced and clean. "I know," he straightened. "The door is behind you. I'll get my coat." "I didn't say I was leaving." She set the cup down on the mantelpiece. "I said your 5 minutes were up. I'm allowing more time." Chapter 5. What the Wolfless Know. They sat, eventually, after a period of standing by the fire that required no explanation, in the two worn chairs on either side of the hearth that clearly saw use, unlike the formal furniture elsewhere in the keep. It occurred to Seren that this was where Calder actually lived, in this one worn corner of the great stone house, with his kettle and his firelight and his silence. She had been seeing the performance. She had not been seeing the man behind it. "Can I ask you something?" she said. "Yes." "When you look at me. Not in ceremony, when there's no one else present. What do you actually see?" He was quiet for a moment, and this silence was different from the others. This one had motion inside it. Someone who doesn't adjust herself to the room. He said it carefully, like he was unwrapping something fragile. "Everyone here, everyone in the valley. They read the hierarchy. They read who is dominant, and they angle themselves accordingly. Posture, voice, word choice. Everything tilts." "You don't tilt." His eyes were steady on her face. "You walked into the betrothal ceremony in a coat with a mended hem, and you stood straight, and you looked my council directly in the eyes, every one of them, including old Breslin, who has made 5 betas cry at dinner, and you did not tilt a degree." Seren remembered that night. She had been terrified. She had managed terror by looking directly at things, which was a technique she had learned at her mother's bedside. "I was frightened," she said honestly. "I know, that's what I mean." Something almost like a smile at the corner of his mouth, and it was devastating in its rarity. "You were frightened, and you did not perform something else. You were just frightened and there at the same time. I have never been able to do that. I have been performing not frightened since I was 7. "What happened when you were 7? She asked, because that number had come up twice now. The almost smile faded. "My father entered me in the Alpha Trials early. I was not ready. I lost publicly to a boy 2 years older, in front of the whole pack." He looked at the fire. "My father carried me home and did not speak of it. Not then, not ever." The message was clear enough. Seren thought of her own mother, the quiet, steady woman who had healed anyone who came to the door regardless of their rank or their ability to pay, who had died with a reputation for goodness and a house full of debt, and whose daughter had inherited neither the gift nor the standing, but had, apparently, inherited the refusal to pretend things were fine when they were not. "A ring given in haste," she said almost to herself. "What?" "The saying on the matchmaker's door. A ring given in haste is a ring worn in silence. I always thought it meant the giving was the problem. Tonight I'm thinking. Maybe the silence is the problem, not the haste. Maybe a ring given honestly requires words to keep it warm." He looked at her for a long moment. "You came here to return the ring." "I came here because I was done wearing it in silence," she said. "That's not quite the same thing." Chapter 6. The Accounting. The snow had thickened outside. Through the high windows, the night was a deep blue-white, and the fire had burned lower, and they had been talking, genuinely talking, the kind that moves in two directions, for what Seren gradually understood was nearly 2 hours. He had told her about the Alpha Trials, about the council that watched everything and forgave nothing, about the particular loneliness of being the fixed point that an entire territory oriented itself around, never permitted to drift, never permitted to be uncertain. She had told him about her mother's death, about the way the valley's pack families had stopped coming for healing in the last year, because her mother's wolflessness had somehow become, in the gossip of the hierarchy conscious, evidence of unworthiness, rather than the simple genetic variation it was. About the loneliness of being outside the structure entirely, neither low in it, which had its own community, nor high in it, but simply absent from it, invisible, as though she occupied a frequency no one was tuned to receive. "They don't see you," Calder said. It was not a question. "No." "I see you?" He said it without ceremony, without any of the formal architecture that usually surrounded his words. Just those three syllables, flat and direct and entirely sincere. Her breath caught. She looked down at the ring. The onyx caught the firelight and sent it back as a dim red warmth, as though the stone had always had fire in it and had been waiting for the right angle. "I need you to understand something," she said. "I will not be a decorative mate. I will not stand at ceremonies and say nothing, and eat alone, and wonder what I am for. If you want this, if you genuinely want this, then the silence has to end. Not just tonight. Going forward, the silence ends." She looked up. "I am not asking for eloquence. I am asking for presence. Those are different things." "Yes." He leaned forward in his chair, his forearms on his knees, his eyes absolutely level with hers. "I understand the difference. And I am asking..." He stopped. He seemed to be doing something difficult with his expression, forcing it to stay open. "I am asking you not to give the ring back. I am asking for the chance to be present. Not in ceremony. Here." He gestured. The worn chairs, the firelight, the ordinary, beautiful reality of a kept space where a person actually lived. "Like this." The fire crackled. The snow pressed its white silence against the windows. "Tell me what the cakes tasted like," she said. He blinked. "The pine honey cakes. Tell me." He thought about it with a seriousness she found, suddenly, charming. "Like the mountain in autumn. Like something made by hand rather than contracted for. There were crystals of coarse sugar on the top." He paused. "I kept the tin." "You kept the..." "It's on the shelf in the kitchen. I didn't..." For the first time in the evening, something unmistakably like embarrassment crossed his face. "I didn't want to throw it away." Seren Voss looked at the Alpha King of the Northern Territories, sitting in his worn fireside chair with his sleeves rolled up and his hair loose, confessing that he had kept an empty tin for sentimental reasons he could not quite bring himself to name, and she felt something unlock in her chest, quiet and permanent, like a door that had been stuck on a swollen frame finally catching its latch. She did not take the ring off. Chapter 7. What Presence Looks Like. She did not stay the night. It was too soon for that, and she was not a woman who moved faster than she meant to. But she also did not leave immediately after the fire burned down. Calder walked her to the kitchen to show her the tin. It was exactly as he'd described. A small, round tin with a pressed pine bough design on the lid, the kind that the baker in the lower village sold for winter gifting. It sat on the shelf between a bottle of mountain oil and a worn field almanac, as though it had always been there, as though it belonged. "You are a ridiculous man," she told him, and she was smiling, and the smile was real. "Yes," he agreed, with the complete solemnity of someone who understood they were being seen clearly and had chosen not to hide. She picked up the tin and opened it. It was empty. It smelled faintly of honey and pine. "I'm going to make more," she said. "And I am going to eat some of them myself this time, because I made 8 and kept none." "I know. I felt guilty about that when I figured it out." "Good. Guilt is productive." She set the tin down. "Walk me to the path." He got his coat. Not the ceremonial fur, a plain wool one, dark and heavy, sensible mountain gear. They walked out into the snowfall together, and he held the lantern, and their breath made small clouds in the air. At the top of the path where the pine trees began, she stopped. "The door," she said. "The locking. I want you to know that I am choosing to have found it romantic rather than alarming. But if there is a next time you want to have a difficult conversation, I will ask first. Yes, the panic was..." He exhaled. "Watching you walk up the path, I could see what you'd come to do. Everything I hadn't said. I just needed you to hear it first." "I know." She turned to face him. The lantern light caught the angles of his face, softened them. "I know that now. but knowing requires you to have said it. Which is the point? She pressed her finger against his chest, once, making the point physical. Words, Calder. Going forward. Words. He caught her hand, gently, briefly, and pressed it flat against his chest and held it there for a moment, over the slow, heavy beat of an alpha's heart. Words, he agreed. She walked down the path into the snow-dark trees, and she did not look back, but she heard the lantern stay lit at the top until she reached the valley lights below. The ring stayed on her finger. It was still cold, but cold in the way that silver is cold, a material quality, not an emotional one, a thing that would warm with wearing. Chapter 8. Spring and its machinery. The silence did not end overnight. That would have been a different story, simpler and false. What happened was more like thaw. The world does not go from frozen to green in a day. It goes through mud, through uncertain ice, through the strange, tender rawness of ground that has been hard for a long time, suddenly asked to be soft. That was the next 3 months. Calder wrote her letters. Not long ones, that would not have been him, but precise ones. Careful, deliberate notes that arrived by pack courier every few days, and which said things like, "The pine trees on the North Ridge are doing something I can only describe as smug in the morning light, and I thought you should know." And, "The council meeting ran long, because Breslin made 3 people cry at dinner again. I thought of you standing your ground at the betrothal, and it helped." And once, simply, "I am trying. I want you to know I am trying," she wrote back. Her letters were longer. She was her mother's daughter, built for language in a way that Calder was not. And she told him things she had not told anyone. About the work she was doing with the Lower Valley herbalist, a quiet woman named Dara who had taken Seren on as apprentice after her mother's death, and about the way plant knowledge sat differently in her than pack knowledge had ever sat in anyone, and about what it felt like to have a skill that was hers and not inherited, not borrowed from a wolf spirit she didn't have. He came to the valley twice before the snow melted. He did not make an occasion of it. He came in his plain coat, and he came alone, and the first time he walked into Dara's workroom and looked around at the dried herbs and the labeled jars and the low-ceilinged practical space and said, "This is where you are. I understand things better now." The second time he arrived at her door with no announcement, and she found him on the step, and he said, "I wanted to see you. I had no formal reason. I wanted to see if I could do that." "How does it feel?" she'd asked. "Terrifying." He paused. "Right." The bonding ceremony was held in late spring, when the ashen trees that gave the valley its name were in full leaf, silver green and restless. It was smaller than anyone expected. Calder had overridden his council's preference for spectacle, and Seren had overridden everything else. And Breslin cried, which satisfied everyone. The vows were not the standard ceremonial text. Calder had written his himself, in the particular spare way he had, and when he said them his voice did not shake, but his jaw did that working sideways thing, and everyone in the clearing understood that they were witnessing something that had cost him, and that the cost was the measure of the meaning. "I will be present," he said, "not in ceremony only. Here, in the ordinary light of ordinary days, I will be present." She had pressed her palm flat against his chest at that, in front of everyone, remembering the lantern and the snow, and he had covered her hand with his and held it there, and the clearing had gone very still in the particular way that stillness arrives when something true is spoken out loud. The ring had warmed. Epilogue. 1 year from the night of the locked door. A ring given in haste is a ring worn in silence. Seren Voss had never thought of herself as a woman who would alter old sayings, but she had been thinking lately that the saying needed a second line. Not a correction. The warning was sound, but a completion. A ring given honestly and worn with words becomes the warmest thing you own. She was in the kitchen at Thornholt Keep, her kitchen now, though she still thought of it as both of theirs, which was a thought she liked, and she was making pine honey cakes. The tin was on the shelf where it had always been, the small round tin with the pressed pine bough lid, She had made cakes twice since the locked door night, and both times they had been eaten together at the worn kitchen table, and the tin had gone back to the shelf. It lived there now the way a story lives in the place where it happened, as ordinary furniture that carried secret weight. Calder came in from the North Ridge. She could hear the boots on the stone step, the specific pattern of him, and he did not knock on the kitchen doorframe because this was not that kind of house anymore. He came straight in, and the cold came in with him, the bright, clear cold of an early winter morning, and she could smell pine resin and snow on his coat. He looked at the cakes cooling on the board. He looked at her. The silver eyes were warm in the way that ice never gets warm. It wasn't temperature. It was quality. Something in the way they moved toward her. "You kept 8 for yourself this time?" he asked. "I kept 10 for myself this time," she said. "I made more." He laughed. She had been cataloging his laughs for a year, and she had 16 distinct entries, and this was her favorite. Short and surprised, as though amusement had gotten in past his guard. He crossed the kitchen and stood behind her and pressed his chin to the top of her head in the way he had taken to doing, which required a significant amount of stooping on his part, and which he did without apparent embarrassment. "Breslin wants a formal winter feast," he said into her hair. "Tell Breslin we will come to dinner if he keeps his terrifying energy to a manageable level."
"I'll tell him you said so."
"You'll tell him we said so." A pause. "We." He said it in the same way he said her name, like it was the only word in the sentence.
"Yes.
We." She picked up the small pine bough tin from the shelf and held it for a moment, feeling its familiar weight, the slight give of the old lid, the ghost smell of honey that lived in it permanently now. She put it back. Some things you kept precisely because they were the beginning. Because a beginning that is named becomes a foundation, and a foundation is the thing a house stands on. And a house is not walls and stone, but the warm, ordinary truth of two people choosing, daily, to be present. The cakes cooled. The fire spoke its low word. The ring on her finger was the warmest thing she owned. End.